Buying a home never goes 100% according to plan, but what happens when something unexpected comes up? Today, we're back with part two of our What If series, breaking down real scenarios buyers face and how we help you navigate them without losing your deal or your sanity. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Closing the Deal. I am one of your hosts, Sam Enright, and across from me is my co-host, Zach Dixon. Zach, what is going on? How are you?
Oh, fantastic. I am unbelievably excited for the second edition of our What If series today. Super excited for this episode and for all of the hypothetical scenarios we will face. These are right now hypothetical, but definitely could be real for sure. So
yeah, hypothetical for you guys potentially, but things that we have definitely come across a time or two in our careers, that's for sure. Especially number one that we're going to get into. I've seen this a couple of times. So but yeah, guys, excited. I know we were kind of scrolling down through the most recent podcast that we had posted, and like, man, we've posted like 11 or 12 podcasts since we came back to part two of this series. So I'm excited to bring it back because I thoroughly enjoyed it the first time that we did it, because it's just kind of fun for us to obviously kind of break down, again, hypotheticals, but really things that we've experienced before, and hopefully help you guys get some peace if any of these things pop up for you, or if you've ever had concerns about these things when going to buy a home. So excited to get in and talk about a couple of the what ifs we have for you guys today.
For sure, because I think that generally speaking, the process goes smoothly for most home buyers, 80-85% of them, but there is going to be scenarios that do pop up throughout the home buying process, and having the information before you get started, just kind of ideas of what possibly could happen can definitely help ease a little bit of anxieties and whatnot. If you're prepared to face something, you're more than likely going to be able to tackle the obstacle rather than not being prepared for it as a whole. So yeah, super excited to go through these and talk about some what ifs.
For sure, for sure. Well, guys, we'll get it started with one of the ones that is a big one that we've seen numerous times. It's not overly common, but what if I change jobs during my loan process? So this is one that is kind of loaded, right? So there are just all kinds of different scenarios when it comes to this. We have had clients who have switched jobs and never said a word about it. We've had clients who have been fired/quit jobs and never said a word about it. And it can definitely make for a very interesting time in your loan process. So it all just depends. I'm going to start with one. What if your job changes? Well, in that first scenario, I would say you really need to communicate with your lender. If this is even going to be something that is a potential, if you've been getting different job offers or you've been considering leaving or whatever the case may be, have a conversation with your lender first and foremost. If you're in the pre-approval stage, typically going to be a little bit easier to deal with than if you are actually actively in contract, because if you're actively in contract, we are going to have a closing date that we have to abide by and try to get done by. So it's really going to be important that you are communicating with your lender throughout, the potential of this. And so, biggest thing is typically if you are going from a W-2 job to another W-2 job where you're paid an hourly wage, and let's say you're taking a job where you step up, you're going to be making more money, working more hours, whatever the case may be, that's usually going to be the most fluent, easiest part of the process to deal with, right? Obviously, for W-2 income, we would just get a verification of employment from your employer, get a pay stub when it becomes available, verify that you are making whatever it is that you said that you were making, and kind of go from there, right? That's going to be typically pretty seamless. However, with waiting for a pay stub, that is one thing to be, aware of, is typically you're going to be what, 2 weeks, 3 weeks out from your first pay stub. So if you are in contract, you know, be sure to let your lender know so we can communicate with your real estate agent, let them know if we're going to need maybe a small extension or whatever the case may be in order to make sure that we have enough time to combat that. Where it gets a little trickier is obviously going to be if you are fired from your job, you quit your job, and you don't have something lined up. And so maybe you're unemployed in the middle of your contract and you're working on getting another job. That's something that, again, is going to be a very fluid situation. We're going to have to figure that out as it goes. Hopefully, you know, you can get some, you know, some jobs lined up and get an interview process and get hired, and so that we can continue to move forward. If this was during the pre-approval process and you had not, you know, you had been, you quit or you were fired, you know, we would probably just say, hey, let's withhold the pre-approval, stop looking at homes until you get this situation figured out. Then we can recalculate the income once you do get a new job and make sure that we're still going to be fine, right? And then really the only time it's going to be completely detrimental to where we cannot do anything is going to be if you change job types. So for instance, let's say you go from an hourly wage or a salary-based income and you decide, hey, I'm going to go be a car salesman and I'm going to get paid commission. If you have no history of being paid commission, you are going to be out from purchasing a home for at least a year. At the minimum, right? Because if you go to a commission-based job where things are variable, you're not going to make the same commission amount every single pay period. You're going to have a history of what that looks like so that we can average that income over that time period. If you switch jobs and now you want to go start your own business or you want to become an independent contractor, 1099, again, at least a minimum of a year before that income is going to be able to be used because you are changing income types. If you're going from a W-2 position where you're set to make a specific amount at a certain amount of hours, and now you go to becoming an independent contractor where you have to file your taxes, report on a Schedule C, it all changes. The documentation is going to vary. So if that is something that you are considering, I would strongly urge talking with your lender and probably setting yourself for the expectation that it's going to be a little bit of time before you're actually going to be able to purchase a home when you move into those sort of positions, right? Because, you know, you're going to have history of that sort of position before you're going to be able to use that income as qualifying income. So that's obviously just kind of a quick overview of what that would look like, right? If you did decide to change jobs, again, this doesn't normally happen for a lot of people. And if it does, usually we're able to work through it pretty easily. But communication is the biggest thing in all of this. Make sure you're opening lines of communication, telling your lender as soon as possible. Like, waiting is not ever going to be a good thing. My dad had a client, literally heard him talking about it. Guy changed jobs for 3 weeks, never mentioned it, got to the clear close, went to verify the income of the employment before closing, call, oh, he's no longer employed here. You know, dad calls the client, hey, what's going on? You know, we just called your employer. You're no longer working there. Oh yeah, I switched jobs 3 weeks ago. You didn't think that that was maybe important to tell us like that. And so, you know, obviously they had to get with the agents. They had to get an extension. They had to verify new income. They had to get pay stubs, the whole nine. And so, and it can be very stressful for a lender at that time, because what if you change jobs and are making less money? What if you're working less hours? What if you're variable? You know, these are all things that are going to be issues. Because if you went from working 40 hours a week and now you work 30 hours 1 week, 36 1 week, 28 the next week, that is going to be a very, very big issue when it comes to your qualifying income on a loan. So, but yeah, guys, I mean, that's one again that, you know, it does happen from time to time, but in everything in this business and in life really in general, right? Just open lines of communication, be willing to communicate with people and let them know what's going on. And it's always going to be smoother. Again, we are here as a lender to help you. Our job is to help you. And so we can help navigate these waters, you know, if we know about it. So that's where I would start. So that's what if number one. What if you change jobs in the process? Not completely detrimental, but something that definitely needs to be talked about.
Great little what if there to get us started. Good scenario. And like you said, I'm sure you've seen it numerous amounts of times and probably have seen it in both ways too. You know, you've seen it all kind of unfold afterwards. So
oh, yeah.
So moving on to our number two, what if? I'm going to be talking about what if the home inspection finds major issues. This is obviously, as a buyer, going to scare the crap out of you to begin with. Number one, you're going to get this inspection report and probably see at the very top, you know, urgent, you know, caution, you know, the red triangle, like getting your attention. You're going to see that immediately when you open that inspection report up. And it's definitely not a good feeling all in all, but it's not detrimental 100% for sure. Ultimately, you know, the inspection report that you get back, no inspection that is done is going to be foolproof, 100% clean, absolutely nothing on it. Every single inspection report that's done is 100% going to have something on it. So that is number one, the expectation that we should set prior to the report even being delivered, prior to, you know, it even being scheduled, honestly. Just make sure that you as a buyer are aware that a clean 100% nothing on it inspection report is impossible. It's not going to happen. So ultimately, when you do go into that inspection report and you see that we have some, you know, major fixes, some big ticket items, you know, often, like I mentioned, buyers are going to panic. They're going to feel like the deal is dead automatically right then and there. Again, me as the real estate agent, what I'm going to be doing is reassuring you. Number one, there's always a fix. There's always something that can be found, agreed upon to, you know, fix the situation at hand. Whether or not it will be agreed upon is the different story. There always is a solution 100%. You can find it. Whether it's agreed upon by both parties is another conversation ultimately. And so when we do have something with the major, major issues, not something cosmetic, not something small that we can fix on a Saturday morning, you know, once we get closed, if we have something like foundational issues, you know, roof damage, HVAC issues, those are the things that we are going to hone in on this inspection report as a whole. Obviously, those are the things that are serious. You don't want to walk into a property that has a leaking roof into a bedroom, or that has no air or no furnace. These are things that you definitely want to have at your new property, obviously. And so ultimately, what we're going to do with those items is everything is negotiable. I've said this probably 1,000 times so far in our podcast episodes and content. Again, we get these large ticket items. Everything is negotiable. What we're going to do is try to negotiate the best deal for you as the buyer, but also at the same time, make sure it's acceptable for the seller as well. What does that mean? That will mean, you know, whether it's actually having the repairs physically done, if we have a roof contractor go out there and physically put a whole new roof on there and the seller is going to pay for it, that's one way that we can do that. We can have the roof be replaced and have the purchase price taken down for the amount of the roof. We can have, you know, concessions given to us, so you have to bring less money to closing in lieu of that roof being fully replaced. Ultimately, though, the hang up and the snag, I think, that most buyers, you know, have in their head is that these things cost money. Obviously, a new roof is expensive. A new HVAC system is expensive. You know, redoing the foundation of the property is expensive. So taking the idea of taking those items back to the seller, you know, probably just doesn't sit right all the way in the head of the buyer. They're probably already assuming that they're going to say no ultimately. And while that is, it can be the case. Yes, you can. We can't just upfront assume that they're going to say no. We have to be able to, you know, have negotiation skills and put these things in front of the seller and, you know, obviously have confidence in those things as well. But ultimately, when the buyers have those things in our head, in your head, you know, it may not always be true, because again, the seller is selling the property. They put the property on the market for a reason. They want to sell the property. These issues are not going to be exclusive to you as the buyer of this property. If they decide that they don't want to accept the negotiations, the things that you put forth to them after you get this inspection report with major issues, they will more than likely terminate the deal at that point and put the property back on the market for another buyer. ultimately, those issues are still going to be there. They are still going to have to more than likely repair these items for another buyer to ultimately purchase the property and get to the closing table. So the path of, you know, least resistance is more than likely going to be sticking with this first buyer. You never really know what's going to happen when you put the property back on the market. Whether, you know, you don't get the interest that you had for the first time, you don't get the offer number that you had originally, all of those things are, you know, risks that you take by putting the property back on the market. So ultimately what the seller needs to do at that point is, you know, weigh their options, and more than likely, more often than not, you know, sellers are going to stick with that first buyer through, for a lack of a better term, thick or thin. You know, they're going to want to get this deal closed and get it to the closing table ultimately. So long spewing what if situation there, but it is definitely something that has happened and will continue to happen throughout the, you know, home buying process. People are going to continue to get inspections. People are going to continue to get these reports back and have, you know, minor issues and then also major issues as well. The major issues is where we will take exception and negotiate repairs, credits, selling, sales price, all of the above. So lastly, an inspection is not a deal killer. It's a negotiation tool. The goal isn't a perfect home. It is ultimately an informed decision.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to kind of interject there because I've seen some things on my side that you would be surprised with. One example comes to mind specifically. I remember we had somebody buying a house in Columbus, and the seller actually paid for like a $10,000 waterproofing basement system to be put in by like basement doctors before the sale of the home. So to piggyback off Zach, to think that those things are just completely out of bounds and that no seller would ever consider it. Again, we have to look at the seller themselves, right? What is their ultimate goal? What is their pain point? What are they trying to do with the property? And again, I mean, if somebody's lived there for 20, 30 years, you know, and if their foundation has issues or they have, you know, roofing or whatever the case may be, like ultimately that was their house for that time period. You know, that is kind of a little bit of their responsibility ultimately, right? Or you're going to have to sell the house for maybe less than what most people will pay so that they can do those repairs themselves, right? So it's all just boils down to, you know, what does that look like for the buyer? So, and the seller. But yeah, I mean, that was crazy. I never thought I'd see anything like that. But I mean, they truly, you know, put in, you know, $10,000 worth of work into the basement for somebody to buy it. And, you know, there was no issues on the seller's side. They just did it and went about their business. So it's just to, you know, just on that part, because again, you know, it is, once you start seeing some of these major issues, you're like, there's no way anybody's going to take care of this. And it's just like, you know, my parents always told me growing up, you never, you know, the answer is always no if you don't ask, right? So, you know, you gotta, sometimes you just gotta be willing to ask. And yeah, maybe the answer will be no, but ultimately you asked and you can move on or do, you know, maybe be okay with it yourself. It all really just depends. But that's, yeah, I mean, very rarely do we see deals completely just go away because of home inspections, unless it's like really, really, really bad and the seller is just like, not willing to budge on anything. But, you know, most of the time, you know, we hear about repairs, we hear about, you know, negotiations, and they're like, hey, we're going to get it all taken care of and we'll get it all figured out. And everybody is happy and moves on and keeps going forward with the transaction. So, you know, don't get too discouraged when you see those.
For sure. And just one more final thing. I think buyers kind of feel that way too, ultimately, is because, you know, they see these large number of repairs, and they don't, I don't think they really realize how much a seller is kind of netting on the back end and how much that probably won't come out of directly their pocket. It's more than likely going to come out of the proceeds of the sale too. So it just makes it a lot easier to get those things done if it's coming out of the proceeds of the sale versus out of their own pocket. So,
yep, for sure. You want to take us into what if scenario number three? I know this is one that we've had some phone call. I get some phone calls about this one, like, hey, you know, it was in contract and now it's not. What does that mean? You know? So,
Yeah, I kind of touched it on in the last segment a little bit, but the, you know, the next what if that we're going to talk about is what if the buyer before you backed out? And you know, that's a very, I don't know about common, but it, you know, it is, it does happen. Properties do go back on the market solely because a buyer decided that, you know, whether it's for the inspection, whether it's because of the financing, whether whatever it may be, the buyer decided that they wanted to back out of the contract. And so if I'm working with a buyer that is interested in a property that's back on market, the number one thing I'm going to do is ask the selling agent why, what happened. You know, most times when they do put it back on the market, they do list in the description what happened, whether it's, you know, buyer terminated due to inspection issues, buyer terminated to not being able to obtain financing. Usually that's listed when they do relist the property on the MLS. But my first thing is just, you know, getting to the agent, finding out what happened, and then, you know, going from there. If it was an inspection issue, I'm going to request a copy of the inspection report. I'm going to check it out and see what made them decide to do that. If it was something that I feel like my buyer will, you know, kind of double down on, I'm going to go back to the agent and ask them what their remedy is. Have they done anything already? Are they planning to do anything to get this situation taken care of? And, you know, 9 times out of 10, when a property does go back on the market, the seller decided to do those issues, fix those issues prior to putting it back onto the market if it is an inspection issue at the heart of the termination. And so ultimately, it just goes back to, I think, something that we've harped on a lot in the podcast content is just communication, 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 just making sure that everybody is all on the same page as to why this went back on the market, what the seller is doing to fix it, and how this can benefit, you know, our buyer and how we can get to the finish table with our buyer as well. So,
yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't think that it's always a bad thing, right? Always a negative thing. I mean, you touched on it. Sometimes they just can't secure financing, or maybe something was done, you know, you pre-approved, but something jumps up that was not a part of that process. You know what I'm saying? And so there's a lot of things that it could be, you know, that doesn't always mean it's just this house is a dud, you know, nobody's ever going to buy it or touch it just because somebody backed out of the contract, you know, when it was in.
And I think that those kind of do present some opportunity in some sort of way, you know, whether you're getting a brand new roof because the roof was not, you know, not agreed upon in that first contract, or you're getting a brand new HVAC system, or there's just opportunity that lies in these scenarios with these properties. You may get it for a discount, you may get credits, whatever it may be. You as the buyer, they're not always all bad if it's right back on the market. You know, there may be issues, but there's always going to be a solution, as I mentioned earlier. You can always find a solution. It's just a matter of if both parties are going to agree with it.
Love it, man. Yeah. Those are two kind of ones that, you know, we have, you know, we do get questions about and just kind of see, you know, when it comes to the home inspection. Obviously, we don't see the home inspection side of things, but, you know, I've heard stories and, you know, we do have clients who share, you know, kind of what they go through on that side. And so it is always, you know, a little interesting, but yeah, I think everything is always, you know, negotiable and you can always navigate around certain things, right? So kicking us off on the last one here, right? What if I fall in love with a home before my pre-approval is ready? Guys, this is one that I think we see a lot more of than you probably think. I think there's a psychological reason to that. And there's also just kind of a state of pecking order that causes this as well. So it's very, very common for most buyers when they think about buying a house, right, to start with the house side. They get in touch with a real estate agent. They are on Zillow. They're on realtor.com. They're looking at these different things, right? And, you know, it's so, you know, when they get excited, they see a house. Oh my gosh, you know, they're looking at the budget online and they're like, we can swing this. We can make this work. And so, you know, then they're like, well, let's set up a showing or let's, you know, contact whoever. And then they end up contacting the real estate agent, right? And maybe they fall in love with it. Maybe, you know, then the real estate agent's reaching out and like, hey, yeah, we can get you set up with a showing. Do you have a pre-approval letter? No, we do not. And then it's like, okay, like snap the finger. Okay, apply here. You know, get it all in, you know, let's see if we can get it all done. We're going to go view a house at, you know, it's a crazy the amount of people that, you know, reach out to us at noon and are going to view a house at 4:30 and want a pre-approval letter in the next 4.5 hours. Right. And so, not to say that it can't be done, but you know, it also just depends on, you know, the lender that you're working with and, you know, how their process goes about. So, you know, in my opinion, I'm always going to urge patience. It's not a bad thing to go out, look at homes, get excited, but we do have to slow our roll a little bit. You know, it's very, very important to look at what is our budget going to be, what's going to make sense for us, all of these different things, right? And sometimes, you know, you have buyers that are a little bit more complex than other buyers. You know, if you have somebody who, you know, piggybacking on the job thing, right? If you have somebody who earns a salary and they've been at their job for 5 years and they've increased their salary every year, you know, they're going to be a very easy borrower to get some pay stubs, verify income, take a look at credit. And if they got 700 scores, boom, okay, yep, you guys are going to be good in this zone. Feel free to go out, you know, take a look at the property and you guys are good, you know? So, you know, that one you can get done in under 4.5 hours. You know, it's usually the ones where buyers get so excited, but they haven't looked at their credit in 5 years. So they have no clue what's going on. And then, you know, they work variable hours and they've only been at their job for 6 months. And, you know, they work 20 hours one week and 30 hours the next, and then back down to 15. And then they're back on a random 40. And you ask them like, hey, you know, you know, how much hours do you work? Oh, we work 40 hours a week. And then you get the pay stubs and it's like, well, we have one pay stub out of the last four that's 40 hours. That's not, you know, truly a 40 hour, you know, work. You know, what's your credit score? Oh, you know, we haven't looked in a few years, you know, and they have late payments or they have, you know, no credit, whatever, you know, whatsoever, because they, you know, operate in cash or they don't, you know, they don't believe in credit, whatever the case may be. And so it's like, a pre-approval process is always going to be different buyer to buyer, you know, and if you have somebody who owns their own business and pays themselves out of the business, now you have to look at business tax returns. You got to look at personal tax returns. You got to look at all these things, right? And determine what the income is going to be and if it's even going to make sense. And sometimes it's going to take a little bit longer for you to get to that pre-approval. I always urge people though, when we talk, because sometimes our pre-approvals do take a little bit of time, you know, sometimes we need a couple of days to get things figured out. And I always tell them like, one, we want to get you to the point where we've reviewed all of this documentation, we've sent you in for pre-underwriting, and we feel 99% confident that as long as there's no weird information that pops up that wasn't talked about in the beginning, that you're going to be able to get pre-approved or get approved for this home once you do go into contract, right? I always stress to our buyers, I would rather send you out 100% confident with a pre-approval in hand that, hey, my lender has done their due diligence, everything looks good, we're going to be able to close on a house once we do find a house, rather than just rush something out. And then we're trying to throw the pieces together once you do get a contract accepted, because what's going to happen? If you're on a timeline of I need a pre-approval in 4 hours, then you're probably going to write a contract that's due in 21 days. And then you're going to be like, I want to close next week. What does that look like? And so the whole thing is going to be set up with the wrong expectations. The whole thing is going to be set up that we're going to be able to breeze through this in about 2 minutes and you're going to have the house in a week. Right. And that's just not how this works, you know? And so, you know, we have a very good conversion rate. We get a lot of our clients that apply for loans and get into contract to the closing table. So it's not a concern, but some people need a little bit more love on everything than others. You know, some people need a little bit of credit score love. We can get you there in 30, 60 days, you know? So let's slow the roll on looking at houses, because that is typically what happens is people get emotional. Once you get emotions involved, rationale starts to kind of go out the window. And now we're making emotional decisions and we're not necessarily thinking clearly. And, you know, we get a little bit discouraged when things don't happen on the timeline that we want it to. And so, you know, I'm always going to urge, get pre-approved first, allow the process of being pre-approved to happen, and the right house will come along when the time is right. If you're on realtor.com and Zillow consistently looking for houses, then it's probably, and you don't have a pre-approval, you've never contacted a lender, and you're like, I'll just figure it out once I find the house I like. At that point, for me, it's already too late, you know, because especially in this market, a lot of the houses that a lot of people like are going up on the market and they're going off pretty quick, you know, and then you're putting your lender in a position where they have to be pressured or have to get something under a certain amount of time. And, you know, and it's just all these things, right? And so I'm always going to stress again, you know, taking the right steps, doing the things, you know, and I know there's a lot of real estate agents out there that will urge caution as well. Hey, have you been pre-approved? No. Okay, well, let's take a step back. Let's get you pre-approved first. Then we'll set up the showing for the house. Then we'll go and do these things, because that, for me, you know, even for a real estate agent, you know, we've talked about it, like, you know, I'm not going to say if people waste their time, but no real estate agent wants to drive all over God's creation to show you five different houses if you don't have a pre-approval letter in hand, and we don't even know if you can afford the houses, if it doesn't even make sense, you know, or if you can even be pre-approved at this point in time, you know, because then ultimately it's time that was, you know, spent and wasted on both parties, right? The buyers are wasting time because they could, you know, be doing other things, and so is the agent. So the worst feeling is finding your dream home and not being ready to pull the trigger. This is why we get our clients prepped and pre-underwritten ahead of time.
I love it, brother. I couldn't agree more. Imagine pulling up, or I don't know. It may not seem that crazy to some people, but it is crazy to me. Imagine pulling up to like an open house or just even anywhere and not really knowing what you can afford, or going to the store and not knowing what your budget is, or, you know, like going to shopping, going to Easton and just, whatever, I'll spend whatever. You know what it, you know what I mean? Just like, I'm not sure how I could operate that way, and want to hopefully push more buyers into not operating that way as well.
Yeah. No, man, it's a, I mean, I get it. It's a game of being ready and being prepared, right? Because there, I mean, it, you know, the markets can be competitive. There can be houses that pop up, but again, it's just, if that's been a thought on your brain, reach out to a lender. If you've thought to yourself that, hey, maybe I'll buy a home when the time's right, again, just a simple phone call and a, you know, 15-minute conversation with the lender to get a little bit of information, see what things are, you know, obviously getting an idea of what you're looking to do, and then grabbing some documentation, filling out a loan application, sending over some docs, you know, and reviewing everything. I mean, in all reality, it doesn't take that long, right? I mean, we're going to have most of our pre-approvals done in 1 to 3 business days at max, right? 3 being kind of on the higher end, usually in about a day or two, you know, you're going to hear. And so if that's the case, it's like, is really losing a day or two that big of a deal in the grand scheme of life? I mean, not really. So yeah, I mean, that's ultimately where we're going to urge to go out, do those things, get ahead of it, you know, and just be prepared.
Well, guys, I think that is all that we have for our part two of the What If series here. We went through 4 different and unique what if scenarios that that really any buyer could face in possibility, and hopefully gave some ideas and some, you know, ways to get around the scenarios that get placed in front of us, the obstacles, you know, when we get those things within the purchase contract or even pre-purchase contract, as some of the scenarios that we laid out, you know, there's always a solution that we can find, and ultimately that's what your real estate agent and lender and team as a whole are going to do for you, is try to find those, you know, those workarounds, those solutions for the things that may pop up in the process. So hopefully you guys found some value and enjoyed the episode today. Sam, you got anything else for us?
I do not, man. Yeah, great episode. Always fun, you know, talking about, you know, what ifs and you know, how to navigate around those. You'll typically find, you know, there's not too many problems that can pop up on this side that are not, you know, able to be navigated around. So, but yeah, other than that, man, just appreciate you guys tuning in as always and checking us out on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you know, wherever you guys find us at.
And the last thing I'll say, guys, is we will not go another 11 episodes in between part 2 and 3 of the What If series. We will definitely have another What If series here for you probably in 2025. That's probably a safe assumption, right, Sam? Here in 2025, we can get part 3 done.
Yeah, man, I think so. It might be towards the end, but yeah, it's going to be, it'll be close, but maybe 6 episodes in. 7 for more. Sure. I don't know. We'll see. So cut in half sounds like a good number, somewhere around 5.5, you know.
Absolutely. So again, guys, if you have a what if that we haven't covered yet, or you want an answer to, feel free to leave us a comment, shoot us a DM. We would love to cover that in the next What If series here, part 3. So again, feel free to reach out, and hopefully you guys enjoyed the episode today, and And we will see you guys again on the next one.
All right, y'all. See you guys.